The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. All right, talking about Jimi Hendrix, the legendary guitar player, the most influential guitar player of all time. Today, Leon Hendrix, Jimmy's real-life blood brother, is here. He grew up with Jimmy, traveled with Jimmy after Jimmy got famous. He's got stories about their childhood days in Seattle, some of the trouble they got into as kids, how Jimmy discovered the guitar, and of course he's talking about the circumstances surrounding his brother's death. Leon's got some definite ideas and opinions there. He doesn't buy the overdose story, and you'll hear why. Leon's also a musician himself, recording and releasing albums and touring. You can find his stuff on iTunes. And you know what else you can find on iTunes? The Team Tiger Awesome Show and Keep It at 100, the podcast from the Jericho Network. Both are there. Do yourself a favor, hit the subscribe button, and be entertained all week long. Start things off every Sunday with the Team Tiger Awesome Show. Make sure you listen to the Creator Wrestler Show. It's so funny, and fans have been listening to the show and posting promos, especially at Crazy Lenny, who's been posting promos as Downtown Douglas, Mundy's character. You got Timmy the Carpenter, who was mine, Bo Archer, who was all of ours, Arrogant Dandy Blaine, that was Mundy's, and then you got Big Guy Tiny Man. Arrogant Dandy Blaine was Cages and Big Guy Tiny Man was Truly. Very, very funny stuff. Go listen to the Create a Wrestler Workshop with me on the Team Tiger Awesome Show, and also Keeping It 100 with Conan. A huge interview with Vader this week where Vader drops a bomb. Vader basically almost died and tells us the story on Keeping It 100. Two great podcasts to keep you rocking. Team Tiger Awesome Show on Sunday. Talk is Jericho. That's me on Wednesday. Keeping 100 with Conan on Thursday. And of course, round two of Talk is Jericho on Friday. And we have our third podcast on the Jericho Network about to be announced very, very soon. But until then, go on to iTunes, hit the subscribe button, leave everyone a 5-star rating and comment, and just enjoy the shows, man. We're doing this for you to keep you entertained. Leon Hendrix is going to keep you entertained with stories about his amazing, legendary brother, Jimi Hendrix. The Jimi Hendrix tribute starts.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, I got a whole gang in here. The Hendrix clan, Leon Hendrix, brother of Jimmy. And then we got little Jimi Hendrix, who is, would it be Jimmy's nephew?
Yeah.
Right. And then we got Andrew Pitsikalis. I could probably butcher that last name, Pitsikalis.
Yeah.
And you're working with these guys. But what a pleasure it is to have Leon here, obviously. Where do you even start being the brother? And I'm sure you've been living with it your whole life, but that is one of the most legendary, influential guitar players, rock and roll stars, pop culture icons of all time. And you're carrying on his legacy for the last 40-some years.
Well, I'm not carrying on his legacy per se, because he created his own legacy with his music. He's going to go down like Beethoven and, you know, Bach and all those people, Tchaikovsky, in the future. So
I agree with that, by the way.
So he carries his own legacy, and I don't want to step in those shoes to do that, because how can I?
Right, right.
He's
Can anybody?
Yeah, exactly.
But when you're talking about, you know, modern day rock and roll, and it's interesting to me because you mentioned Tchaikovsky and you know, those type of guys, Beethoven,
Mozart,
you know, that was kind of the original.
Well, he listened
rock
to those
and
people.
Roll. Did he? Jimmy was a fan of that.
Yeah, he
really.
After he did a concert, that's all he would listen to was those guys afterwards to calm down, you know, after his performances. And I do the same thing after I come off tour.
Right.
So I know where he came from. It just kind of mellows you out, you know.
Well, he's kind of become the modern day version of that, though.
Exactly. He's you know, he's the Beethoven of the 20th century. You got to admit it.
And like you said, from the modern era where rock and roll became popular in the 50s, became the new classical music.
Yeah.
And Jimmy's right up there with all of them.
And it's still the best music ever written because there's nothing to replace it yet. Mm-hmm. Because music comes in eras of music. Remember how it came with the rock and roll first and then jazz and the big band era? Mm-hmm. And then the 60s came and exploded into all these great musicians, you know, great ones. Like, we just lost three of them.
Which is unbelievable. You're talking about Lemmy and Bowie and Glenn Frey.
I know. I'm scared because I'm older than they are. Yeah. And I'm going.
But see, that's another thing too, dude. I was looking at this list. You're talking about, like, what is going on with all of these legendary guys passing away? And once again, you have guys that became famous in the 50s and 60s, legendary, that are now in their 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. We're going to see a wave of these legendary guys passing away for the first time ever because there was none of these guys before 1950 and 60. You know, you got a guy like Jimmy who passed away so young. Then you got a guy like McCartney or Mick or mm-hmm. Keith Richards. Those guys are on the other side of the coin. So I think we're going to see a lot of those guys passing away over the next 5-10 years, which is a total drag.
Exactly. So my suggestion is to get on Obamacare. No, see, I know a lot of musicians. The doctor said, "Hey, you got a little problem here," and they go,
"You know, it's rock and roll, man."
You know. And they continue to live their lifestyle when all they had to do was go to the hospital and, you know,
and get checked out. Right.
Because according to the statistics today, you can live to be 100, 110 years old right now. Mm-hmm. If you just go get, you know, the shit.
Get yourself taken care of and looked into. Yeah. Do you know that I had Lemmy on this show, great guy. He told me that he was a roadie for Jimmy in the 60s for about 6 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said one of his jobs was to get Jimmy acid and be 7 tabs for Jimmy and then 3 tabs for Lemmy.
That's great.
That was the
So you'll get 10 total.
10 total. You get 3. I take 7.
That might have been a miscalculation.
Because I
was on tour with Jimmy.
Right.
He never got loaded before. Maybe early in his days. In his days when he was like Jimmy James and the Blue Flames in New York and you know, at the Cafe Wa and stuff like that. He smoked weed and take acid. But then he learned his lesson. Like, I go on tour too. I learned my lesson. I fell off the stage one time and I'm going, "Hey," because when I go on stage, I look down and there's like 50 drinks that all the fans, you know, like.
Yeah. They're lining
up. And you can't help, you know, sucking them down and shit like that. But I was lucky. When I fell off the stage, I fell on my back, and I was still playing. Mm. And they thought it was part of the show.
That's very Hendrix.
But it never happened again. Mm. You know, when Jimmy went on stage, he never was loaded.
Really?
Yeah. He said, "Leon, I got these 2 acid tabs and this marijuana, and there's a bottle of Johnny Walker on the table in the dressing room, but I don't want none of it yet. Mm. But when I'm done, after my 1 hour and maybe 15-minute encore, I am done and I can get loaded and I can go out with the bitches, you know, and stuff like that. We can go out and party at the Rainbow and at the Roxy," because when Jimmy got done playing, he was only getting started. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He was calling all friends. He called Buddy Ma, said, "Leon, Buddy, let's go jam." Eric Burton, all them guys. "Let's go jam somewhere." You know, Mick Jagger. All the, you know, that's when they had their fun. See, it was only a job, that hour and 15-minute thing. But see, he just woke up. You know, before
he was just getting going. Yeah.
Yeah. So now I'm chasing him around. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, and they're jamming in the studio. They find studios all over Hollywood
just to go rock out.
Yeah, with Little Richard, and, you know, just to go out, hang out, and make music.
Right.
Because that's when Jimmy got started.
How much older was Jimmy than you?
4.5 years.
Okay, so when he started rolling, were you like on the road with him as an assistant or?
No, I was on the road as a, like, what the, wow, what the, who the is this guy?
So you did? Did you have a job or on tour? Or you just hanging out with Jimmy?
No, he gave me my own limo. I stayed at the Beverly Hilton Hotel in a nice suite next to his.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though when he left town, I still had all that shit. And so he goes, Leon, I'm going to San Diego. I'm going. Okay, cool. He's like, you want to come? I go, no, I'm good. Because, you know, all the girls are coming to me to get to Jimmy.
That's the secret, right?
I was like.
You're the portal. You're the gatekeeper.
No, Jimmy told me, he said, listen, Leon, I don't want all this activity of all these girls. So just be the buffer, you know. So I buffered. Oh, shit.
I buffer.
Can we talk?
Is
this risky?
Man, yeah.
Okay. So the girls would, you know, they'd say, you tell your brother that this is the best you ever had. And I'm going, well, let me try it again. Because they couldn't get to him.
Right.
Because we had this little booth in the Whiskey A Go-Go. It said, Hendrix only, reserved. And I was only like 19 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even when Jimmy wasn't in town, it was his booth.
Oh.
At the Whiskey. You know what I'm talking
about?
So I just took advantage of that. So I had, you know, it was like all these models and shit, you know.
Woo. Where did you guys grow up?
Seattle.
In Seattle. So when you were kids, was Jimmy playing guitar all the time? Or
no. When we were kids, Jimmy was more like he was into sports. You know,
into sports.
Yeah. You know, we got on the baseball team. I was Little League. I was Pee Wee. He was Little League.
Mm-hmm.
We got on the football teams. You know, Pop or whatever.
The Pop Warner.
But I was littler.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all we did. But then our father couldn't afford to buy the shoes and the equipment and stuff like that, so we had to give it up. But we were good. I could have been like Alex Rodriguez today if I would have had some fucking shoes. And then the governor of the state of Washington bought Jimmy some football shoes. You know,
why did the governor buy him shoes?
Because he was the coach of the team at the time before he became governor.
Okay.
What was his name again?
I can't remember.
That would be,
Google it right now, quick.
Mr. Governor.
Mr. Governor.
Yeah.
We'll get to it.
So he bought Jimmy some shoes. And Jimmy was able to play, keep on playing, right? And Jimmy wasn't a great star, but when things start going bad, they put Jimmy in. And he'd try extra hard, and he would make good plays, you know?
Right.
And but then after that, after sports, he went into the Boy Scouts. I went into the Cub Scouts, you know, because we had a sponsor. Our aunt was like ahead of the YMCA or something like that and got us in there because we were so poor that if we didn't have help from these activists, we would never do nothing.
Never anything, right.
So he was a good Boy Scout. I was a good Cub Scout. Okay? But then Mom and Dad, they had the falling out and stuff and, you know, because we had a lot of addictive behavior in those days. And my dad he tried so hard, you know, but him and my mom, they broke up, and so me and Jimmy kind of like was going between Dad and Mom, and sometimes Dad, you know, he'd come home drunk. And this is nothing against my dad, okay? I love my dad. He was a good dad, okay? I'm just saying that when this happened, that me and Jimmy, you know, I called him Buster. You know, his name was Buster.
His nickname, Jimi Hendrix, his nickname was Buster.
Yeah.
Okay, why is that?
Because we used to go to we lived in the projects.
Uh-huh.
But every Saturday morning, they had Flash Gordon for a nickel. You can go see 15 minutes of Flash Gordon and Buster Crabbe.
Ah, okay.
So
Buster Crabbe was the star of Flash Gordon.
Exactly. Yeah. So Jimmy said, my name is Buster because when my dad went to go get him in California from this foster home or something, his name was Johnny.
Jimmy's real name is Johnny.
He was born Johnny Allen Hendrix.
Okay.
Okay, that's the name of my mama's boyfriend.
Oh.
So there's a whole thing going on here.
Okay. You know what I'm talking about? So Dad says, I'm not calling you Johnny anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he brought him home, and he would never answer.
Because he was in the Army. Al, his father, was in the Army for 5 years. And when he got back from the Army, that's when this situation occurred.
Okay.
So what I'm saying, let me finish this story because it's pretty cool. Dad brings Jimmy home. I'm born, you know.
Yeah.
You call him. He only goes by the name of Johnny. So if you didn't call him Johnny, he wouldn't answer.
Uh-huh.
He'd go.
Right.
You know, he'd look around because his name was Johnny.
Uh-huh.
For 5 years, he felt that name.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad said, no, your new name is James Marshall Hendricks. You know, and Johnny goes, no. You know, so he said, I make my own name. You know, so he became Buster from Buster Crab.
That's great.
And now, if you wanted to talk to him, you had to call him Buster and he would acknowledge you.
Wow.
You know? and then he even made a cape and jumped off the roof one day because he thought he was Buster Crab. It was crazy. He hit the ground so he just got plump. But didn't bug him, you know?
Was he starting to get a love for music?
Not yet.
Okay.
So we go through this turmoil with our families and stuff like that. And me and Jimmy would go from mom to dad's. And then sometimes we would leave dad because he wouldn't show up for like 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Because he was a gambler and alcoholic. But we loved him.
Sure.
Because every now and then he'd bring home a horse meat hamburger for us. And it was the best hamburger in the fucking world. See, in the old days, in the 50s, horse meat was legal to make hamburgers on.
Wow.
Yeah. And those are the best hamburgers, you know?
I don't think I've had a horse meat.
They only cost a nickel.
Yeah. Nickel for the burger and nickel for the Flash Gordon movie.
Exactly. So sometimes we would just go to Mama's house and stay. And Mama would... She taught, she taught me how to do artwork and taught Jimmy how to do artwork because she was a little bit more on the creative side than my dad. My dad was a hard worker. He said, you got to work with your hands and dig ditches and make money and be poor the rest of your life. That was his attitude.
That's just the way it was.
Yeah, that's the way it was. So when Jimmy started playing guitar, my dad was so upset with him.
Hmm.
He said, you got to work with your hands. And Buster kept saying, I am working with my hands, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then my dad would take the guitar away, you know, sometimes, because we had to go work on the weekends.
Okay.
You know, do gardening work. I mean, like, all week in the summertime and stuff like that. And he would give us $1 a piece. So Jimmy saved up $5 because he got it into a band called the Rockin' Kings.
Hmm.
And they said, you can't play in the band unless you have this red coat from Sears.
So because that's how it was. You had to look, everyone looked the same in the bands back then.
They didn't know that individuality was going to be a unique thing.
Right.
Later.
You were a group where everyone looked the same.
Everybody had to look the same with the black tie and stuff like that. So Jimmy was pretty happy with that.
Hmm.
But he became so good at what he did that. When Ray Charles came there and moved to Seattle, they were looking for a guitar player. Now, if you watch the Ray Charles movie, the guy says, we should have stayed in Seattle with that kid.
Oh, they're talking about Jimmy.
That was Jimmy. I think he was like 15 or 16 years old playing in the Penthouse Club. Ray Charles lived in Seattle for like a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
And so Jimmy had to take me with him all the time. So I made friends, and they would always feed me some adobo rice and, you know, like, you know, the cheap, good shit, though, with gravy, you know, stuff like that. And then I'd sleep under the stage until Jimmy was done.
Wow. That's amazing how he was 15 years old and able to do that. That's how it was back then, right?
Yeah.
He
was so good. No, he didn't go in the Chitlin Circuit yet.
Okay.
This is right.
Because Seattle's
next year,
the
he left.
City.
See, he did everything in Seattle he could do. He played Parker's South, Parker's North, all those clubs in Seattle. You know, the Birdland, that was the epitome of Seattle rock and roll at the time. If you played Birdland, you had made it to the top. But then when Jimmy played Birdland, he went, there must be something else. So he left. He went in the Army. He got in trouble with the police, and they said, if you go to the Army, you know, we'll cancel this shit out. Right. Same thing happened to me.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
So were you guys pretty wild kids at that point?
No.
Just typical
Jimmy,
kid stuff?
Jimmy was like my babysitter and my father.
Mm.
And he watched over me. He took me everywhere he went, to band practice, to all these places, you know. And we made friends with people because the mothers of the band members would feed us.
Mm.
You know what I'm talking about? You know, you got fried chicken and shit. So I was happy to go with Jimmy, you know, because he was going to get fed. You know what I mean?
Which means you got fed.
Yeah.
Was he like just a prodigy right off the bat with the guitar? Was there a lot of practice involved, or was it
No. Here's how it goes. We were cleaning up one of our neighbor's garages. You know, my dad, you know, got hired out. The lady said, hey, clean all this shit out. Take it to the dump. And Jimmy found this little ukulele.
Mm-hmm.
It had one string on it. And he goes, let me say something. Can I have this? She said, anything in that garage, you can have. Because it's... And so that's how I started, with that one string ukulele.
Wow.
And then, you know, the first song he ever played for me was Peter Gunn. Dun, 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 yeah. Dun, because you can play it on one string.
That's right.
You know? And so then he figured out that if you tighten a string, you get these notes. And these other notes, or you flatten it, see, you get the whole composition of all the music.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So he figured this out in his mind. Because I remember when he was little, he would go to run to grandma and say, Grandma, there's something in my ears, you know. And so grandma would take, you know, a cotton swab and some baby oil and swab his ears out. And he goes, I still hear it. In other words, he was hearing the music.
Wow.
A long time before he even had an instrument to play it.
That's,
you know?
That's incredible, man.
And so when that ukulele came... That was his first indication that, whoa, there's, you know, now it's making sense in my brain and in my ears, what's going on.
You know, it's funny, the very first song I ever learned on guitar was the Peter Gunn theme as well. I didn't turn out like Hendrix, but that's the same one. Like,
oh, my God. Because
everyone knows
it. You can play it on one string.
And you feel like you're, you know, Hendrix when you go, that's amazing. I never knew that before. So you mentioned that Jimmy went to the Army. What are you doing when he went into the Army?
When he went to the Army, I was, you know, Dad was like, when Jimmy left to go into the Army, my dad says, damn, I'm sure glad I got rid of that motherfucker. You know?
Wow, yeah.
See, my dad didn't know, but we loved him so much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I was in a foster home.
Oh, okay.
So when Jimmy went home, the foster people sent me, they got rid of me. They said, oh, we can't take this guy. This guy's like incorrigible. Because, come on, I'm separated from my family.
Mm-hmm.
I have a weird attitude now about everybody, you know, everything.
You must have been happy when Jimmy got out of the Army then.
No, you're going ahead. There's a whole bunch of shit. So what happened was, you know, electricity was off at the house. The phone was working. Jimmy would call every now and then from the Army and stuff and say hi to me and stuff and say how it's going. I said, oh, it's all good. You know, and he said, well, where's Dad? And I said, I have no idea. And evidently he was in jail for like a week.
Hmm.
You know, because he got drunk and got in a fight with Johnny.
The boyfriend.
The boyfriend of Mama.
Right.
So I became a street kid. And, you know, people in the neighborhood, they took care of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mrs. Weinstein from across the street, you know, she gave me Jewish food. Miss Mitchell on the corner made me chicken and washed my clothes, made me take a bath.
Mm-hmm. You know? They took care of you.
Yeah. So... It's called the extended family kind of thing, mm-hmm. with poor people. You know,
right.
Although they don't have enough to share with their own kids, they still will take you in,
right,
and give you, you know, something, oatmeal or something. And I was very pleased with that. And so I got in trouble. You know, Jimmy was famous now. You know, he sent me money and stuff. And
so he was on the road touring.
Yeah, England. He called me from England. He goes, they changed my name. I'm called Jimi Hendrix Experience now. I'm going, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, listen to this new song. So he starts playing this song. I'm going, so I put the phone down because he's just my big brother. You right. know, I don't know what he's doing.
He put it down to leave and then come back. Like, that's great, man.
And no, he's still playing. When I come back. You know, and in them days, it was underground through the ocean for phones. Mm-hmm. It wasn't.
Satellite.
You know, so yeah. you get all this shit in between. So when he played the song over the telephone, it didn't come out good. So I said, oh, Jimmy, you need to get a job. It was crazy. So same thing happened to me. I got in trouble. I'm a street kid. I got in trouble. And I went to court, and they said, hey, if you go in the Army and go to Vietnam, we'll cancel this charge. Same thing happened to Jimmy. And so we're both end up in the Army. He got out now, you know, because he went airborne. You know, he was like, he dove out of airplanes and shit. He sent me pictures of him taking pictures of his buddies, you know, coming down out of the air.
Unbelievable, yeah.
You know, he wasn't supposed to do that. But he was airborne. He was special forces. Mm-hmm. You know, see, he was like, he wasn't no pussy. No, right. I'm saying that.
Yeah, gotcha.
But when I went in the Army, I said, no, I ain't jumping out of the airplane. So I just went to regular Army infantry. Ground pounder. Mm-hmm. You know, boots on the motherfucking ground. Go to Vietnam and get killed type of thing.
Yeah, a foot soldier.
Because, see, when you take your test in the Army, if you say, I like camping, making fires, and going on big hikes and stuff like that, see, that's how they trick you. If you say, no, I want to read a book, you know, and stuff like that, then they'll put you...
Right.
But if you say all this, command center, yeah, yeah, I like camping and not.
Yeah, you're going in the field.
You're boots on the ground, buddy.
Yeah.
It's called advanced infantry training.
Okay.
So I said, oh, shit. But then when I was in the Army, Jimmy played the Star
Spangled Banner.
Banner.
At Woodstock?
And, yeah.
Yeah.
And all the generals, you know, because I made a lot of friends in the Army because they found out I was Jimmy's brother, right? Mm-hmm. So I made like, you know, platoon. You know, my own platoon of motherfuckers that are on my side, right?
Yeah.
And so they came to me and said, your brother committed treason.
Really?
For Star Spangled Banner.
For playing the Star Spangled Banner.
The way he did.
The way he did. But I said, wait a minute. The lyrics say, bombs bursting in air. You know, the lyrics say.
Some fire.
Violence.
Yeah.
So he just interpreted it to the guitar. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, no, he committed treason. So I was on fucking KP for like 4 months. I was like, you know.
No kidding. What a story that is.
Because they said, listen, we got one general in his army, and it's not you, you know. In other words, they didn't want the other, you know, people to get involved with me. So they isolated me from all my friends.
And the impact because of that era.
Because of the Star Spangled Banner.
Did you ever talk to Jimmy and say, what did you do?
Nah, I didn't care. No, I was good. So what happened was Jimmy came to town. I had to leave.
Mm.
You know, I had to leave from the Army.
From the Army, yeah.
And then when I saw Jimmy, he said, Leon, you want to go on tour with me? And so I forgot I was in the Army. I said, hell yeah, let's go. You know, so I went on tour with him And then that turned into, you know, more prison time and all kind of shit.
They came and found you on tour, basically.
No, they didn't come and find me on tour because they were not that smart to follow Jimmy around to all these places because we were like, you know, we were on a plane to here, the plane to there, in a limo to there, and everywhere. So Jimmy went to Hawaii. He said, Leon, meet me in New York next month, and we're going to start a new company. Because this would be right before he died.
Yeah.
And he wanted to start a new company because his contract was up with these criminals.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to Hawaii. I went to Seattle. Got busted by the MPs. Sent back to, you know, the Army. And then I go to prison for my deferred sentence from earlier. And then Jimmy dies.
While you were in prison?
Yeah. Yeah, while I was in prison.
It's
in my book.
Yeah, I'm going to check this out. How did you find out?
My dad called me.
Oh, my God.
And then over the radio in the prison, it said, Jimmy Enders died of drug overdose and that. And then a lot of people said, listen, shut the fuck up because his brother's right there. Hmm. Don't say nothing. And so the whole prison was quiet. And then the chaplain came on the phone. He goes, Leon Hendricks, blah, blah, number 45432, report to the chaplain. And that's when I knew it was true. Hmm. My dad was on the phone.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Tell us a little bit. You mentioned you were on tour with Jimmy. What was that like being on the road with him?
Are you crazy? I mean, it's like, it was some, like, I just think he's my big brother, right?
Right. And you don't understand.
No, I don't understand. Because,
what's going on?
I'm not a hippie yet. Yeah. I'm still a street kid with the suits and the
crew cut, army
pimp
guy.
Pimp hats and shit, you know, and the pimp glass, you know, stuff like that. In fact, there's some pictures in there about that whole thing. So when Jimmy came to town, I said, fuck. You know, because when he came in on the plane, there was so much news media and shit like that. I thought, what did he do? Is he going to get arrested or something? No, so we had a lot of fun together. He said, come on tour with me. And I said, of course I will. And I did. And then I became a hippie.
Okay.
You know, he gave me some clothes, you know, some awesome ass shit, you know, to wear.
Flowery clothes.
My dad got pissed off. He said, why are you wearing Jimmy's clothes? And he said, why are you backstage? You should be out. I said, Jimmy, you know, come on, we're brother. We're like, we're having fun now, you know, back here.
Yeah.
But my dad didn't understand the whole implication of the whole thing. You know?
Well, once again, you're talking about 1967, 86. There's no such thing as a real rock star then. You don't even know. Those guys thought they'd play for one or two or three years and then quit. Yeah. It was never something that would be an iconic, real job type of a thing, you know?
I know, but it blew my mind. And when I saw him at the Hollywood Bowl, and when they floated off the stage like this, it like raised up like I think I was loaded or something. I go, oh my God, this is my brother, you know, just super mega star.
Was that the Jimi Hendrix Experience?
Yeah,
at the Bowl. Mm-hmm. So what was it like watching him on stage? Would you watch from the side stage? Would you go in the crowd?
No, I was always backstage with him.
Okay, but when he was playing though.
No, after I seen it.
Yeah, you just go hang out in the backstage after you seen it once or twice.
Yeah, it became like...
Well, that's what happens.
He's just my brother.
Yeah, you've seen the show.
Hey, dude. But are you going to get a job at McDonald's after the show? Jimmy, or something like that?
Jimmy had a house in Hollywood for a while, and Leon had a lot of fun interactions when he was in Benedict Canyon, which was here locally. And definitely a lot more stories that are more fun than... really what it is in the concert than what it is when you're hanging out in his house.
Well, who's coming over
as his brother and every celebrity is rolling
who's
in
who's coming
out.
Over to his house when you're over there?
Okay. Rick Burton, Mick Jagger, the guys from The Who, Buddy Miles. This is when Jimmy started getting rid of the real experience and he wanted to, you know, do more, you know, music that he wanted. So he wanted Buddy Miles and Billy Cox. And then this is when the management, I think, I don't want to say this, but I think that they were, they said, you can't have a black band. We're going to lose the whole market.
Yeah, his buddy and that.
Because Noel and Mitch were white.
Controversial time.
Yeah.
And then when I was with these guys.
You know, prominent.
And when I'm with these guys, you know, at the Benedict Cannon Mansion, all the English guys and all the management had this wing over here. Mm-hmm. And they never even come out. And Jimmy was like jamming in there with all these friends and the girls and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And so they started to isolate themselves because the management knew that this band, The Experience, was over. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, Jimmy happened to die pretty soon, mm-hmm. 1 week before his contract was up. So I'm not going to say nothing, but I'm saying something.
Yeah, mysterious, right? Yeah.
And he had formed Band of Gypsies, which was mm-hmm. the group that he did with.
So, Band of Gypsies.
Yeah, they thought they were going to... And Jimmy was tired of playing Foxy Lady and Purple Haze. He said, "I'm like, hey, come on. I just made an album with Miles Davis in New York. I got an album with Paul McCartney. I need to branch out a little bit and play more music." They said, "No, you got to play Foxy Lady, Purple Head, because you're signed to a contract, and this contract's not up until like 6 weeks. And if you ever did any investigation, you know that they made Jimmy play 30 concerts in 20 days. Because his contract was..."
Is this Chaz Chandler, the manager?
Or is Chaz Chandler is a complicit. Michael Jeffries was the manager. But Chaz Chandler, the owner of the Animals. Eric Burton or something like that,
he found
was complicit.
Jimmy.
Yeah.
Was complicit in whatever happened to Jimmy at the end. Okay?
And what was Jimmy's official cause of death? Overdose of what?
Nothing. No. See, what happened was Jimmy's been followed by the FBI and the CIA. He was given the nomenclature. He was given the nomenclature of Bin Laden. If you go to the CIA reports, there's a little number up there. He was a national security threat.
Why?
Because
he was a black man playing guitar.
He's a black man with power in the white world.
Panthers. He was
and all the white girls were following him around, leaving college.
And what did you say, Jimmy?
Like, he was bringing people together at that time, and it was like a real, like a propaganda thing where they didn't like that at that time. You
There's a real conspiracy theory about the same thing with John Lennon's death, and that he was bringing people together as the face of peace.
Exactly.
And we can't have this.
And now here's a black man in America at that time rising up and doing that.
All the famous people at that time are dead.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, Jimi Hendrix. You know,
we'll even go back to Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy, the guys.
Great peace.
But when you talk about,
they were too liberal.
One of the versions that is Discovery Channel did a really good episode called "The Will," and it talks about when Jimmy died, and Leon and myself and other attorneys and people are part of that show. The way they depicted it was Jimmy was just traveling so much; he was really tired. He was with a girl that he was with in his place in London, and he had taken too many pills with some red wine to just go to sleep. Mm-hmm. He just wanted to go to sleep. And the problem was that those pills, he thought, because
Andrew,
why don't you tell it then?
Okay, time out on that. Jimmy was partying in London at the time with all his friends, right? He wasn't loaded. He wasn't high. He had a fish sandwich and drank some damn wine. But his two buddies got sick, and they flew out and went to the hospital right away because they were sick. Mm-hmm. You know, they were throwing up and all this kind of crap. So Jimmy just stayed in London, and then they say they found
a nightcap,
you know, some sleeping pills next to his bed.
Okay.
But the autopsy report says it was a powder, you know, sleeping powder.
Mm-hmm. Like over the counter or whatever.
It wasn't enough to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But when he went to the hospital, he had like 2-3 gallons of wine in his hair, sticky. In other words, I think they were waterboarded him. I think, I don't want to say the word, but the autopsy report says he had no drugs in him, enough to kill him. Okay.
There's always been a theory. The roadie of Jimi Hendrix wrote a book before we put out our book, and he depicted that Jimmy was murdered by management, and that if you read that book, that's a theory behind it. What Discovery Channel believed is that he didn't realize how strong the sleeping pills were because they were European sleeping pills, and just that combination with the wine.
Well, his girlfriend's father owned the biggest drug company in Germany. Monica Dannemann.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they had, you know, that.
There was a fear that would get dragged in.
But there was not enough drugs in him to kill him.
Right.
That's what the doctor said.
That's what the issue is.
But as soon as Jimmy died, the CIA and the FBI put out all these Jimmy dies of heroin overdose. Jimmy never took heroin in his life. Mm-hmm. You know? Jimmy did this, Jimmy did that, because they want to discredit him. You know,
he's just a hippie.
Giant mm-hmm. cover-up.
Yeah, he's a drug addict hippie.
And the management knew that he'll make more money if he died anyways, because they're like, okay, he's making this much money now, but it was a problem to them because he was just doing
his contract
thing.
Was up.
And he owed so many people, like even Mafia probably like fronted Jimmy money, and they knew that he was going to get the bag. So there was all type of things that were going on with Jimmy that it was just a big conspiracy.
One week before he died.
Plus, back then, you remember, like, the Hells Angels were the guys that were the security guards. There were guys that were taking in money.
Altamont,
a lot of things were going down back then that were behind the scenes that people didn't realize were going down. And there was a lot of control. And Leon has always felt that towards the end, he died of attrition. They kept working Jimmy
to kill him.
That he has to take drugs. Right. He had to take this to keep going.
It's a vicious circle at this point. Take the speed to play the gig, take the downer, go to sleep.
The mafia is a part of this whole scenario. Because, see, they wanted Jimmy. Because Frank Sinatra worked for Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. He sold 1,000 records a year. Mm. He signed Jimmy to Warner Brothers, and Jimmy's selling millions and millions, and they're going, whoa, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm. And the thing was is that if you look at the laws right after that, Michael Jeffries' estate was the one that claimed they owned all the rights to the publicity rights because they made Jimmy sign these documents that gave them all the rights. So it becomes questionable that when this could have happened and the management was going to be able to, you know, not have a hold on him, that they would still own his publishing rights, kill him off, and then still live off of the legacy like Janis Joplin and other people.
A couple of friends are still alive that said that that the mafia came to their house looking for Jimi Hendrix. Yep.
And they were looking
Jimi
for
Hendrix
his stuff,
documents.
His will, everything. And
to
that's
do
why.
What
they,
with?
Because they didn't want it to know it would go to the family. If it was written to Michael Jeffries, then obviously Leon and the family would contest the publicity rights. Mm-hmm. You understand? So they didn't want them to even have any kind of leverage. If Jimmy in his will was always going to leave everything to Leon, then it seems suspect why it never appeared, why it disappeared.
Because Jimmy didn't have a will, correct?
Or there wasn't he was always said to have it. All of his friends and everybody knew, but when he died, no one knew where it was.
He did have a will. But you know what happened? My dad was in the hospital, okay? Mm-hmm. I was in prison. The attorneys used this vocabulary or something, saying that I'm not able to attend, and my father's not able to attend these kind of functions. So they said, let's seal these documents right now. We're talking about Leo Branton, you know, owns Natalie Cole, Nat King Cole, Marilyn Monroe, Jimi Hendrix. You know,
and later on, Leon's stepsister sued Leo Branton, saying that they were hiding how much money, and that they actually did is because Al was illiterate. They were giving him $75,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. He was giving me half of that.
He was giving him half of that, and they were pocketing almost $8 or $10 million a year.
Oh, at least the amount of money the state was making.
Until they caught up, and then when they fought it, Al won the rights back because of illiteracy. He literally had eighth grade.
I don't know what happened.
Not even
I don't know how to read
education.
This.
So they gave it back to him.
Yeah.
And then my adopted sister took over, and she said, well, Al regained his cognizance. He's a normal person right now. He's not illiterate no more. And so he cut me out of the will, and my name is Bodacious. That was the name of the trust fund.
So the whole Hendrix family, at least Leon,
I'm
his
Bodacious.
Children and family were
kicked $25
out of
million.
The estate. And at that time, all Leon received was a gold-plated record, and she won.
Not even a real one.
She won approximately $80 million of what the estate was worth back then.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. You know, when you have something like this, this iconic guy passes away, a brand, you know, an industry, how does that get, you know, divided amongst the family? How do you even decide?
So in this particular situation, I mean, you could talk about what it is legally, you know, normally is usually based on what's left in the will. Mm-hmm. But because there was no will, and because the way everything kind of played out over the years, when Al was dying, Leon's stepsister was taking care of Al, was the one that brought up fighting over these rights with Leo Branton. And she said that she'd take care of Leon and she would take care of the family and she'd take care of everybody. And Leon kind of wanted to do his own thing. Mm-hmm. You know, his dad called him Bodacious. It was a nickname that he had for him for, you know, forever. And when it said that Al had put $25 million in an account for Leon and his family and let them know that he would always be taken care of. When the crux of the estate was given to Janie, she kept all of the revenue, all of the rights, all of the publishing rights, and removed Leon and his legacy and family from the estate. It's the largest, between all the court battling over the rights and having rights and who has rights and who did this and who did that. Over the past 20 years, it's the second largest court battle in rock and roll history aside from the Beatles. Almost $40 million has been spent all these years fighting over rights.
And she could have settled for less than what the attorneys cost just, you know, to give us something. You know,
it's really something of spite. Like, you know, why not help out Jimmy's blood brother, his kids, the people that are the legacy?
100% blood brother, yeah.
You know, I mean, and again, this is an adopted stepsister that only met Jimmy a few times, that when Al married her mother, she became part of the family.
You know, it's interesting. I just hosted the Classic Rock Awards, and Jimmy won a lifetime achievement. I'm sure you heard about it.
Yeah,
and Lemmy presented it, and she was the recipient.
Now, the funny thing about, you know, talking so much about Lemmy is Lemmy only found out, like, right before Christmas that he had cancer, from what we were
basically
told.
And one day after Christmas.
Yeah, I was invited to go to the funeral and stuff, but I didn't really know Lemmy,
right,
you know, to be honest with you. And I felt like so many celebrities and just people that loved him so much wanted to be in that space, and I just didn't want to be like people saying, well, how did you know Lemmy?
Right.
You know, that
thing. Poser,
like,
what are you?
Like, I don't want to be, you know what
I mean? It became the place to be, that funeral.
Yeah, yeah. And the Rainbow Room and everything else afterwards, you know. And because the one interesting thing is our company, you know, we fought for a lot of rights, and, you know, we'll get more into what we're doing as a company. But Purple Haze is a new version or a new outset of our original company. And with that, we've launched cannabis products and cannabis lifestyle things through Purple
with Jimmy's
Haze.
Image. With Jimmy's meds. And
we're doing
Jimmy's merch,
meds. Yeah. Cannabis. So we started, when we launched, there were Forbes magazine talked about the top 10 celebrities in the U.S. that are really just going to break it when it comes to the cannabis industry and all the branding and marketing and money that's going into it. So they talked about Jimi Hendrix, and they talked about Bob Marley, and they talked about Cheech and Chong, and you know, the Snoop, and the obvious top 10 that are going to make it to the market.
But you mentioned how there's a lot of issues between the family and the rights. How are you allowed to use Jimmy's likeness for all of these products that you have here?
So it's an interesting course of many years, and not to get too crazy into
the battling.
Yeah,
don't get too technical with it.
But in a very layman's term, is a long – in the early 2000s, Leon started a foundation, the James Marshall Hendrix Foundation, which his father wanted Leon to do, and it was in his will. It was something that was, you know, indisputable.
Mm-hmm.
And when Leon started the James Marshall Hendrix Foundation a few years afterwards, Jimmy's adopted stepsister, who runs the estate, said, you can't use Jimmy's name in a foundation. You can't use his name, likeness. We own all of that. You're not allowed to do anything with it because I'm the sole controller of that. Well, the mistake was is that after that court battle, the judge felt that Leon does have the right in a nonprofit situation to use Jimmy's name and likeness.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, that set a precedent of, but not in profit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Leon, with gentlemen that had helped him through the years throughout legal battling, started a vodka company that was very successful. But sadly, she also sued that company and said that there was going to be a confusion between Leon being because on the box they would put a Hendrix family company, and she says, well, we're a Hendrix family because we're the estate. And then sued them under confusion, and then ended up losing that case, and then the vodka company went down. During that time, I came into it very interested in licensing, was approached by them to work with Leon and work with the company. And as I realized things were awry and going down the wrong path, we started a company called Hendrix Licensing. And at that point, Leon and I partnered together and started a company with the belief that Leon was allowed to use his actual name, Hendrix. I mean, it is his
name. Right, your legal name.
His blood, right. But she has trademarks in the name Hendrix. She has them in all these different categories and all these various things. So when we started our company, she came after me after winning the Vodka case and thought, well, I'm just going to sue everybody that helps Leon. And then that way nobody will ever want to do stuff with the family. Mm-hmm. And that's a very interesting tactic to keep her monopoly on the brand worldwide.
So then how did you get to this point?
Work. So what happened is that she sued me, sued Hendrix Licensing, and then we went through a court battle for many years, almost took 10 years to settle.
Oh my goodness.
And in in 2009, we won some preliminary rights by the judge to be able to use a new company name and use Jimmy's name and likeness. And then we started acquiring really cool IP that was proprietary to our company.
Gotcha.
Jimmy in Boston Gardens, at Woodstock, in Framingham, Massachusetts, at the Miami
gigs,
Pop
concerts.
Gigs that he was in, photos of him at those concerts.
She can't use them.
And then she can't use it because that's our property. And then we had artists from around the world starting doing awesome portraits of Jimmy, psychedelic, this, smoking, hanging, stuff that's new, stuff that the new fans, 2 billion fans that Jimmy has, that we wanted to give our opportunity of our brand, our license, and everything. And then in 2011, we won the court case to be able to do that. But again, since 2009, we've had merchandise, T-shirts, posters, a book that he wrote.
What do you think Jimmy would think of this? Family arguments and this sort of thing.
Rolling his grave.
Rolling,
yeah.
Well, you know, I don't think Jimmy is concerned about it, because he made his legacy that's so powerful that nobody can diminish it forever. And I want to make one more announcement, because we only have a few minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
I write music myself.
Yeah,
check my stuff on iTunes. Check my Hendrix.
He's a guitar player as well.
Yeah. Well, that was a mistake.
Oh, yeah. Gee, I'm Jimi Hendrix's brother, and I'm playing guitar.
Yeah.
So there you go.
But he's a great artist.
But I do all my shit on piano now.
Okay.
But I got my kids coming up, and it's going to be a thing called Hendrix Next Generation. But you can check my stuff out on iTunes. I got 3 albums on there. Or whatever those music industry things are, you know. Mm-hmm. Just check my stuff out.
He has a YouTube channel.
Go to YouTube.
Facebook.
I got 2 million on YouTube. You know, just checking out my shit.
I'm sure a lot of people want to check you out, obviously because of your lineage, and you probably that's a big shoes to fill. Yeah.
No, I'm not trying to fill no shoes.
No, but I'm saying to public's eye, it's like Jimi Hendrix's brother. You got to have your shit together and be good stuff.
Listen, I've traveled around the world like 4 times now. It's so boring because I've seen everything. But they treat me like royalty.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I get a whole palace to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I'm in Poland or Germany or Switzerland, Italy, France, all, you know, they love me, you know. And what I do is they say, play some Hendrix, so I hire hot gun guitar players.
Go with me. Smart,
yeah.
And they do all the hard. You know.
Have you guys seen the Hendrix Experience with like Buddy Guy and Zakk Wylde and those guys playing?
We don't really participate in that because, again, she owns the music and the rights to the music. The only thing we really have is name, likeness, and image that we work with our property and license, T-shirts, posters.
Sure.
And,
I'm just talking about the respect level of all those great players coming out there and just throwing down for Jimmy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you feel – actually, I want to ask one question to Jimmy over here, the other Jimmy.
Yeah.
Something interesting happened when you came in. Leon was saying that you were born on Jimmy's birthday.
Yeah, exactly 42 years later and exactly 14 years after his death.
Jimmy died on his birthday?
No, Jimmy died in September.
No, he was born on Jimmy's birthday.
He died in 1970, but I was born 14 years later in 1984.
Gotcha.
So 42 and 42 is 84. He was born in 42. I was born in 84.
Let me tell you a story.
Jimmy's a pretty spiritual guy. Do you ever feel anything?
Yeah, I always feel it. It's
feel
like
the presence?
Me. It's like music's like a vibration, like he said. So that's how he communicates, is like through vibrations and music and love and peace and harmony. It's just I always feel it. Every time I hear his music, I feel like I was there some weird way. You know,
getting
it's crazy.
These pimples.
I'm like a voodoo child, you could say.
A voodoo child.
Let me tell you a story how it happened. My dad's in the hospital getting a heart transplant.
Yeah.
They come to my dad and say, it's Jimmy's birthday. And my dad says, well, I can't talk right now, but my son is upstairs in the maternity ward having a baby right now. So they rush up to the maternity ward, and Jimmy gets born. And so they put it on the radio, little Jimmy. So we didn't even know a name to give him yet because we didn't know it was Jimmy. Yeah. Come on. My dad's in the hospital. My wife's in labor. You know, I'm not thinking about the name.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Until the radio station says, little Jimmy was born tonight on Jimmy Henry's birthday. So we had to call him little Jimmy.
And they say I got a birthmark on my head that was like Jimmy's too, so it's weird.
Yeah, like I said, with a guy as spiritual as Jimi Hendrix, you know, you wonder if something's going on.
No, he makes visits.
Yeah?
Sometimes,
do you feel the presence sometimes?
Dude, when I'm on stage sometimes and I need help, I say, help me, Jimmy. Because, you know, he said, just bend those notes, you know, because you can bend a note to flat or sharp any note on the guitar. You know what I'm talking about? And so I said, help me, Jimmy. And so that's how he helps me. You know, and sometimes I can just bend the note and hold it because I'm in the dominant key.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other band is like doing all their shit. But as long as I stay in this key and don't move, I'm good. they go, yeah.
A couple final questions. What do you feel that Jimmy's true legacy is?
His music.
Yeah.
I mean.
Love,
it's
peace.
It's undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
His music. He brought so many people together. He was a crossover musician, played white music and black music and put them together as one, you know. And he was just he was an angel.
Angel, yeah. And like you said, nobody has played guitar since.
Exactly.
Or probably ever will.
You know? Exactly.
It's like you get Jimmy, you get, you know, Van Halen, you get, B.B. King. There's certain guys that play that no one can really ever touch them.
Yeah.
You know?
But, you know, every year, you know, only guitar players can vote.
Mm-hmm.
They go, who's the greatest guitar player? And they all vote Jimi Hendrix for the last 45 years. Number one guitar player.
Can't be replaced.
By guitar players themselves who voted. Because only guitar players can vote.
Right.
Yeah.
So, what's your favorite Jimi Hendrix song? If you had to pick one. Or solo.
Well, solos are too hard for me to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
But
good point. Hard to comprehend.
I think my favorite song is a song that he wrote for our family. It's called Castles Made of Sand.
Hmm.
That's our family. Mom and Dad arguing in the first verse. I'm the little innocent boy in the second verse. Mama dies in the last verse and goes to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite song. But a lot of people ask me that, and I go, I'm not even done listening to all this shit yet. You know what I'm talking about? There's no favorite. It's Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
No matter what.
Whatever song it is.
Yeah, whatever song it is. Because I go in bars, I go here, I go eat at restaurants, and they're playing Jimmy.
You know, for me, again, it's tough. I always liked Purple Haze. It's pretty much the reason why we started Purple Haze Properties. And it was the antithesis of what it was.
Good
Jimmy,
segue too.
When he wrote that song, some say that it was based on if he was walking at the bottom of the sea and looked up at the top from being underwater.
That's 1983. I should be. Don't ask him about Jimi Hendrix stuff. Okay? He's a business partner. Okay?
I get to be the business partner.
How about you, Jimmy? Your favorite Jimmy song?
Little Wing.
Yeah. Can't go wrong.
I love that.
That's about our mama.
Is it really?
Yeah.
About your mama? Man.
Lucille.
I'll tell you what a great conversation with you guys, man. I really appreciate it. And what a cool legacy to talk to two generations of Hendrixes, man. Is your last name Hendrix?
Yeah. Jimi Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, literally Jimi Hendrix.
Is it J-I-M-I?
It's J-I-M-I, James Joseph Hendrix, but it's Jimi, J-I-M-I.
That's great.
But little Jimi.
Thank you, fellas.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay.
Leon Hendrix is frequently on the road. Follow him on Facebook at Leon Hendrix Official. That's Hendrix with an X. You can catch him the next time he comes through town. And thanks again to Leon, to little Jimi Hendrix, Jimmy's nephew who was sitting in, and to Andrew Pitskalis, Leon's business partner. Great conversation. Great stories about the legendary Jimi Hendrix. Check out Leon's book as well. It's very, very moving. Man, what more can you say? Thanks to them, and thanks to all you guys for downloading Talk is Jericho twice a week, every week for free, and for supporting all the amazing sponsors of this show, including the OG OG sponsor, Amazon. All right, all my Amazon links are on podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got amazing links for USA, UK, Canada. Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage of the show to the show to help us cover production costs. Everything you can think of, you can buy it on Amazon. I want you to take a picture of what you buy, post it on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I will retweet you and I will follow you. And you know I will. Go to the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page on podcast1.com. Hit the Talk is Jericho button. No extra fees or hidden charges when you use the Amazon links. And also check out the rest of my great, great sponsors, DDP Yoga. Get 5, 10, 15, 20% off the DDP Yoga program, plus 3 months of full access to the DDP Yoga Now app. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Don't forget DraftKings. Use my promo code Y2J. You play for free with your first deposit at DraftKings.com. Do the fantasy football. Do it right. It's a huge thing right now. Don't forget Original Grain Watch as well. Tell the time, keep time, and keep the environment healthy. Go to originalgrain.com/Jericho. You get 15% off your entire paddle chest. You get a lot of great deals here when you're dealing with the killer deals. It's not just a catchy name. They really are killer deals brought to you by Talk is Jericho. And don't forget, March 15th, 2017, the biggest podcast ever, Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho. Countdown clock is running 160 days and counting until the biggest podcast ever. And thanks a lot for everybody who had some great notes about Raw this week. It was a great time. Ashton Kutcher and Danny Masterson, great, great guys. Super into what we do. It's always great to have the guest hosts that are into what we're doing, and they get it, and they want to be a part of it and want to have fun. And Danny and Ashton were definitely in that zone, working on getting them on Talk is Jericho. I'll keep you posted on that. Also had a great segment with New Day and Kevin Owens, and I did get knocked loopy when Woods caught me in the face with an inadvertent elbow to my nose that caused the blood to really hit the floor. It was bad. I got hit and I kind of went into a little bit of a daze. I didn't know where I was for a few minutes, but now I'm back on track and I'm back for the attack and back in black. So all is good, man. So you guys keep on listening for all the great Talk is Jericho shows over the last few weeks. Brooklyn Brawler was really, really amazing. Shep Gordon, you got to go check out the Shep Gordon episode. Some of the greatest rock and roll stories you will ever hear. But keep listening right now for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And right here, we got the original Four Horsewoman, minus one. I got Marina Shafir, Shayna Baszler, and Jessamyn Duke. Okay, Ronda Rousey did not make it, but we got the Four Horsewoman of the MMA world. They're great friends, sharing some killer stories about their fights, their MMA training, women kicking ass, what's coming in their respective futures. That's going to be here, the Four Horsewomen minus one on Friday. We're going to see you then. All is good, all is well. We'll see you soon. Stay hard, stay wet, stay hungry, and a big yeah, boy, to all you and yours.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.